Radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Phil Connors with me. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
And we're going to be talking to Vanessa Beely, an independent journalist who has done all the most important research work, in my opinion, that to tell us who this organization known as the White Helmets really are. Well, I think we have Vanessa on the line with no further ado. Are you there, Vanessa?
Yep, I'm here. Good evening.
Well, thank you very much, Vanessa. I feel very guilty. I know we're keeping you up, but you know, you're coming to Canada. You're going to be speaking in Hamilton on December the 3rd. That's a Tuesday at the New Vision United Church, 24 Main Street West. And we'll give further details. You're also going to be speaking in Toronto and elsewhere. I'm very glad you're coming because we have a situation, I guess it's come to light as a result of this, of the death of the individual given most credit as an individual for putting together the Syria Civil Defense Organization, as they chose to call it, and known by Hollywood as White Helmets. It's this clearly now people are a little uncomfortable because he died, Mr. Le Monsieur, under odd circumstances. This is causing people to once again return to who he is. You've known for a long time who Mr. Monsieur was, and also what the organization is. So I suppose this is a good opportunity to now go back to how did it come into being? What is its real mission? And we're going to have some issues with them going forward, I assume. But I guess, can we start with that subject? Everybody in Canada definitely will be asking you. Who was this gentleman who died, and what was his role in creating this organization?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there will be an article written by me that will be published at Mint Press News in the next couple of days, looking into, as you said, the suspicious circumstances of the death of James Le Monsieur, but also sort of looking at a number of people that are associates that were working with him, and just really to try to unravel the causes of his death, whether it was suicide, as was being intimated by some of the media, or whether there was external involvement in the death. Mm-hmm. Now, James Le Monsieur had a history both in the British military. What the media appears to be trying to deny now are his connections to British intelligence. Now, The Guardian has even admitted that he was connected to British military intelligence when he was working in Kosovo. And, of course, in Kosovo, Pristina, in 1999, he was working under the UN representative then, Bernard Kouchner. And he was basically tasked, as far as we are aware, with the remodeling of the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army, which, of course, was made up at that time of Albanian warlords, and Al-Qaeda elements, who, while under the kind of remodeling engineered by Le Monsieur, were carrying out, and that sort of heavily reported, particularly by Carlo Del Ponte at the time or shortly after, they were carrying out cross-border organ trafficking operations. Now, fast forward, of course, very recently, Maxim Grigoriev of the Foundation for the Study of Democracy has carried out an exhaustive investigative work into the allegations made by Syrian civilians that the White Helmets are also carrying out organ trafficking operations. And, of course, that is sort of borne out by the testimony that I've received from areas previously occupied by the White Helmets and their terrorist affiliates. Civilians telling me of organ extraction, even in the hospitals in the areas inside Syria that were occupied by the terrorists, but also the transportation of children and adults to the border with Turkey, where then they were selected either for organ extraction or for burial, depending on the condition of the bodies and the age of the victims.
Yes.
So there's an interesting background leading up to the death of the Missouri, and a number of things were being exposed. For example, we've had the recent revelations about the OPCW in the last 2 days. We've had the leaked email from an OPCW scientist, of course, again showing that the OPCW report on the Douma chemical attack in 2018 effectively lied by omission. It left out the reports of various members of its investigative team.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the White Helmet staged the hospital scenes in Douma Hospital that, of course, led to the media vilifying the Syrian government yet again for an alleged chemical attack. Mm-hmm. It led to the UK, US, and French unlawful aggression against Syria. And now, of course, questions must be raised as to who murdered the civilians and the children that were used as macabre props for these alleged chemical attacks that are now being proven baseless, because the latest leak has shown that there were not even effectively chlorine traces in the area that would direct anyone to consider that this might have been a chlorine attack. The sarin, of course, had already been discredited even by the OPCW themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were a number of elements that were coming to the surface that was seriously jeopardizing the credibility of the White Helmets and, of course, by default, the credibility of their founder. And what's interesting is that since the death of Le Mesurier, the media have been very, very strong on the fact that they're trying to distance him from the founding of the White Helmets. Even Raed Saleh, the so-called, he calls himself the chairman of the White Helmets, he has put out a public statement saying that James Le Mesurier didn't found the White Helmets. Now, this is a downright lie.
I was going to say, Le Mesurier himself would contradict that, right?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
We read in our own papers here, I mean, our foreign minister, Freeland, and Mr. Mesurier, and a Canadian ambassador to Turkey, I think it was, coordinated the removal of White Helmets from the south of Syria into Israel, then to Jordan. There was no dispute who everybody was. They all had their credentials. I'm sure their little plastic cards to show a guard. But, you know, this is, to me, by the way, you originally laid out for so well, this starts off, it's so outrageous that the media had bought into this, because there is a serious civil defense organization with exactly the name that the Globe and Mail, the New York Times, Washington Post says is the official name. But there is an official serious civil defense. It belongs to an international organization. You demonstrated that in your writing.
Yeah, absolutely. The real Syria civil defense was established inside Syria in 1953. It is currently servicing probably 85% of Syria's territory, that has, of course, now been liberated from the various terrorist groups by the Syrian Arab Army and the Syrian government and its allies, of course. And this official organization in many of the areas where the White Helmets then took precedence, their centers were attacked, their equipment was stolen, many of their crew members were killed, or many were kidnapped or forced to work with the White Helmets, actually, under, of course, the tutelage or the control of the terrorist groups dominated by Nusra Front.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also just like to come back to Mesurier for 1 second, if I can, because one of my other theories on this is that I actually believe when we look at the amount of financing that was coming in through Mayday Rescue, and we have to remember that Mayday Rescue was set up 1 year after the establishment of the White Helmets by James Le Mesurier. Mayday Rescue was basically a sort of a funneling operation for the financing coming in for the from the sponsors of the White Helmet. So the Missouri was handling upwards of $200 million dollars in funding for the White Helmet. Mm-hmm. Now, what is interesting, and this I've discovered in the last 2 days while I was writing the article, was that over the last 9 months of funding, the funding for Mayday Rescue actually dropped off from the UK Foreign Office, which had been the primary financier of the White Helmet and of Mayday Rescue. So I'm starting to wonder whether Missouri was involved in any sort of money laundering with the money that was coming into Mayday Rescue. Of course, the Dutch government withdrew funding in 2018 because they said that the funding system was unreliable and they couldn't guarantee that this financing was not going straight into the hands of the terrorists because of the system that was being used, that there was no accountability, that there was no transparency. So this raises very important questions over the financial dealings of Le Mesurier, and possibly raises questions over, as I said, the fact that it may not have been a suicide. This, of course, is all speculation at the moment, but what I'm doing now is digging into those financial details, looking at the people who were involved in Mayday Rescue to raise the question.
Yes. Well, you know, of course, you addressed very early on the, and some others have followed along after you, including Seymour Hersh, who made a wonderful, I thought, phrase about this. He says, the White Helmets appears to me to be a propaganda construct, which I thought, that's a very helpful observation. And on this program, we asked the question last week, you have to have a kind of a colonized mind to believe that advanced citizens of Aleppo would need to illegally cross a border into Turkey to meet a British Marine to learn how to rescue people. Isn't that absurd on the face of it?
Yeah, that is. Now you put it that way, that's the first time I've thought of it along those lines. But yes, it is entirely absurd. Even when I had meetings...
Rubble is not a new problem for people of Syria?
No, exactly. And what is very interesting, actually, you reminded me of it, was when I had various meetings with the UNDP and other UN agencies in Damascus. When I asked them who carried out their first aid training, their paramedic training, I didn't ask any leading questions. They all said it was basically the Syria Civil Defense, the real Syria Civil Defense, not the White Helmets, and that they had no contact whatsoever with the White Helmets. Neither do, of course, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent. The director of Syrian Arab Red Crescent in Aleppo, after the liberation of East Aleppo, told me that they never saw the White Helmets operating, rescuing people in East Aleppo. He described them as terrorists or working with the terrorists. He said they were financed from outside, and they were definitely not perceived as a Syrian organization by the majority of Syrians.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Vanessa Bila. Vanessa is going to be speaking in Hamilton December the 3rd. That's a Tuesday at 24 Main Street, the New United Church. And Vanessa, you have a wonderful Twitter account, by the way, and I hope everybody just follows you because it's like getting the daily paper, and except it's a better one than the one that comes at your house. I'd forgotten, it's right at the top. Every day I pass by it and look, but today I looked at it closely. You, 1 year ago, were talking to someone who was in the White Helmets. His name was Al Mohammed. And one thing that suggested itself from your interview with him is that not only the White Helmets are associated, obviously, with terrorist organizations, how else could they function, but there seems almost to be some factionalism, because his answers to you, and it was such an important moment. I don't think very many people have ever actually spoken to a White Helmet. You did. he indicated he wasn't happy with certain other White Helmets, because he thought they were giving up the fight, whereas his group intended to continue. But he said, you asked him, do you mean some of them were with al-Nusra? He said, oh, yes. That was his answer.
Yeah, al-Nusra and ISIS. I mean, what this demonstrated to me, he obviously didn't know who I was. From the fact that I was British, made him rather more positive towards
made his
me
mouth,
than he might have
his
seen.
His mouth
had.
Worked more easily.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, good, an English person.
oh, good, I can mention funding, which of course he did almost immediately. But what was interesting here, as you've pointed out, is that, and I see this all the time, that there's this kind of gang and counter-gang among the terrorist groups and among the White Helmets. I mean, we know that the White Helmets is a sectarian extremist group. There are no other minorities included within the White Helmets. This is a very important point, because the real Syria Civil Defense is made up of all sectors of Syrian society, so from Christian, from Druze, from Shia, from Yazidi, from every single minority sector, there are members of the real Syria Civil Defense.
And
the White Helmets are a sectarian outfit.
Yes. And as your articles point out, this is, when they call it an NGO, the problem is it has a, I think, a UK home address. It is a, registered NGO. But the real Syria Civil Defense belongs to an international organization with standards. It is, rules of conduct. It's not, I'm going to make this up myself and then call myself Captain Marvel or something. You don't get to do that when you belong to an international body.
No, and I mean, this is the extraordinary thing. When I spoke to the International Civil Defense Organization, I think it was 2 years ago, or the first attempt by the White Helmets to get the Nobel Peace Prize, the officer that I spoke to there basically said that they don't even recognize the White Helmet. The only organization they recognize, of course, are the real Syria Civil Defense. The fact that this entire propaganda construct has endured the loss of credibility over the last 4 years is indicative of the protectionism of this organization. And that's one of the things that I'll be looking at when I'm speaking in Canada, is the billionaire complex behind the promotion, support, and sponsorship of this group, which indicates to me the importance not only of the White Helmets, but of this entire concept. And of course, I've also reported that I consider that the White Helmets was launched as a global franchise. In other words, that it might be rebranded just as the terrorist groups are rebranded, and it might be relaunched elsewhere globally.
Well, by the way, they are employees. They are employees, are they not? I think one of your articles pointed out they make more money than the actual Syria Civil Defense.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, their average wage for a guy off the street that joins the White Helmets is $150 a month. And, of course, then that goes up incrementally depending on the responsibilities of the member. If we look at the Syrian Arab Army, they're earning each soldier an average of around $40 a month, and the same wage for members of the real Syria Civil Defense. So those who are genuinely defending their country, who are genuinely rescuing people in the country that is under the occupation or the invasion of various terrorist groups, foreign mercenaries, all funded by the same governments that are funding the White Helmets. Again, very good point that you reminded me of. You know, this is not an NGO. It's not a group of volunteers. These are employees of the same hostile state that are and have been attacking Syria for the last 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that emergency exit of them through southern Syria, we spoke to you at that time, it was very revealing because suddenly secretaries of state and foreign ministers directly got hands-on involved. And I assumed that that's because those were their employees.
Absolutely. And in fact, I wrote an article fairly recently, again from Mint Press, about the heavy investment and involvement of Erwin Kotler in that rescue. It was him that actually brokered the rescue or the deal with Netanyahu. And of course, Kotler has gone on alongside Alan Dershowitz, who of course has the connections to Epstein, to promote, support the White Helmets. But also to support, of course, the partitioning of Syria and the Kurdish issue. They're more centered around the Kurdish state in Iraq. But, of course, Israel, we know, supports Kurdistan.
They're the silent partner in this Kurdish issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Kokla has played a very, very big role in the promotion of the White Helmets, particularly in Canada. So that's another thing that I'll definitely be addressing.
Oh, we look forward to that. Again, by the way, Vanessa, we have her on the line, and we're keeping her up late, but that's now you're awake, we don't feel so bad. But you're going to be speaking Tuesday, December the 3rd at 7 o'clock at the New Vision United Church, 24 May Street West. And before we let you go, I must make sure we talk about this subject. I know that you have been in the vicinity of this last stronghold, I would say, Idlib, it's always described that way, mm-hmm. where there are many White Helmets and all the major bad guys who are, the world mm-hmm. has seen them at work. These are serious terrorists, and they are in Idlib. Now, the whole world has been asking, what is the status of that, and can you tell, you get an idea how this is going to play out?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, what we've seen in the last few days is the uptick in the military operation to finally liberate Idlib. And we've seen the Syrian Arab Army liberate, I can't remember all the names, but a certain number of villages in the southeast of Idlib province. And, of course, what we're seeing in Western media is the amplification of the Russian bombing hospitals, the Syrian army attacking civilians. Of course, again, mm-hmm. This is proven to be false. The targets are hospitals or schools that have been taken over by terrorist groups and converted into military centers or, of course, prisons for civilians that don't comply with their extremist ideology. At the same time, the same terrorists that are embedded in Idlib and on the outskirts of West and North Aleppo are pummeling West Aleppo suburbs with mortars and Grad missiles and explosive bullets and sniper fire. And that has been intensifying, again, as the military campaign to liberate Idlib intensifies. So, of course, this is a pattern that we see.
It's kind of like a diversion.
Well, not only a diversion, it's a punishment of the civilian population mm-hmm. for the advancing of the Syrian Arab Army. They don't attack military installations. They attack civilian installations, hospitals, schools, residential areas. And those were the areas that I visited very recently in West Aleppo. At one point, I was in a neighborhood, and I was in the last house in a street. The next house was literally occupied by Nusra Front and by a Nusra Front sniper. So we were unable to actually cross the street from one side of the road to the other because we would have been shot. That's how close these civilians are living to the terrorist groups. And, of course, this is never, ever reported in Western media, while, as I say, they're condemning the Syrian government
yes.
And its allies for attempting to free these civilians of this siege by terrorists that they are effectively defending in their media rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, I said before, Vanessa has a Twitter account. You can find some footage of your visit to that area you speak of, where you talk to civilians who feel, of course, threatened there. And as this goes forward, I'm sure we are going to be deluged with stories of atrocities committed allegedly by the president or the government of Syria, as well as the Russians. Before going on the air, I checked out, I rarely look at them, but the White Helmets actually are straight propaganda. I mean, all they ever say is mm-hmm. the Russians are bombing, and then pictures of themselves in their cute outfits running down the street. But I don't understand it. You must, I know this is frustrating to you, that so-called mainstream media people who are proud of their credentials, they win awards, they don't ask some obvious questions. The Red Cross doesn't run around with helmets on its head and try and making documents against one side of a conflict. They actually and try to help people out. And trying to identify war criminals is not part of their assignment. And then the second thing is, if you were looking for some, as we knew from Aleppo, clearly from East Aleppo, they were firing shells into West Aleppo, so crimes were being committed. But never once did the White Helmets ever say a word about that. And when someone got their head cut off, never once did the White Helmets say anything.
This is entirely true. And actually, a colleague on Twitter just did a very interesting survey on, I think, over 4,500 tweets by the White Helmets, of course, condemning the Syrian government and the Russians. And of those, I think there's maybe one complaint against Nusra. So out of 4,500 tweets, there's one mention of Nusra Front atrocities. And of course, you know, the film, the two Oscar-nominated films, completely revise history, completely eradicate Nusra Front from our consciousness. Last Men in Aleppo, which was supposed to document, the occupation of East Aleppo, never once, it didn't even show Nusra Front fighters, although they did by mistake film a couple of cars with the flag in the back. But I think that was sort of remiss editing by them that they didn't take it out. And I watched the film many times to pick up on the mistakes that they made. But basically, that film in itself, I mean, it completely erased the existence of Nusra Front, which, of course, dominated East Aleppo and dominates any of the areas occupied by these extremist sectarian groups. So, as the same in Idlib, as Brett McGurk has described Idlib as being, the biggest haven for al-Qaeda since 9/11. So UN has even admitted that Idlib is dominated by al-Qaeda, which is controlling 70% of the territory. So the White Helmets are clearly working in collaboration with Nusra Front, with al-Qaeda. And going back to the statement that al-Mahamid made when he spoke to me, when he said that if a White Helmet group is led by a Nusra Front, it means effectively that all members of that group will be Nusra Front. Of course, what he failed to tell everyone was that the group that he belonged to was affiliated to the Free Syrian Army, which of course works alongside Nusra Front. So therefore, his group was Free Syrian Army. It was led by Free Syrian Army, and it was made up of Free Syrian Army, the so-called moderates, who of course have never been moderates from day one.
The other term that is, seems to, they've kicked that around for a long time. It's become laughable, actually. I expose you further. One question about the, people have, and your writing and 21st Century Wire and others have pointed this out. There have been several times when the terrorists have been in a corner, and the White Helmets have actually, of course, met among them. And the Syrian government, with their Russian allies, have arranged for them to safely get on buses and then go to another place where they begin to cause problems. I just wonder now, in Idlib, are they becoming an undigestible element? I mean, the last place they would be able to go would be Turkey, and there's one, it doesn't seem like a country that would really want them. You think there would be a green bus solution here? It doesn't look likely to me.
Well, I mean, there has been to some degree, because, of course, Turkey is recycling the terrorists that were under its control in Idlib and using them in the offensive in the northeast. So there has been a degree of sort of percolating terrorists from Idlib to the northeast by Turkey, who are using them as proxies.
Yeah, the ones who would agree, right?
The areas of the northeast.
I'm sorry.
But, of course, what we need to understand here, and, you know, we need to understand the process by which the Syrian government, with, of course, the help of the negotiators within the Amnesty and Reconciliation team of Russia, is to try to provide, first of all, Amnesty and Reconciliation for Syrians that will lay down their arms and who will accept Amnesty and Reconciliation and stay in the liberated areas. Now, I've interviewed White Helmets that accepted that amnesty and stayed in Douma, for example. Then, of course, the more extremist elements, the ones that are not prepared or are not allowed to remove themselves from their terrorist affiliation, leave in the green buses. Mm-hmm. Now, they've all been bused into Idlib, but the negotiations with the leaders of these groups have been ongoing mm-hmm. through the Russian efforts and even the Syrian efforts to try and achieve some kind of diplomatic political resolution with the Syrian, and I emphasize the Syrian element of these extremist groups.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm aware, that has now failed.
Mm-hmm.
So now the military campaign has begun, or begun again, because of course there was a ceasefire a few weeks ago to allow the political resolution to be attempted, at least. And I think the president, the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, in one of his most recent interviews with Syria TV, made this very clear. He said, you know, we will always, always attempt a political resolution. If we cannot achieve political resolution, then it has to be military resolution. But that is the, you know,
the last solution.
Yeah. Yes. The last solution mm-hmm. after everything else has failed. So mm-hmm. the fact that the military campaign has picked up again in Idlib suggests to me, and from speaking to my contacts within the Russian Amnesty and Reconciliation teams, they've reached the end of the road with negotiations. So now we're back to the military campaign. So we are going to see an intensified military campaign now to liberate Idlib.
Mm-hmm.
Whether Turkey will open its borders to those elements, that's anybody's guess. Erdogan is always playing this kind of double game, playing Russia off against the United States, defending its own neo-Ottoman ambitions, which of course we're seeing now in the Northeast, and you know, working with both sides really. So mm-hmm. it's very difficult to predict what Erdogan is going to do if Idlib reaches the point where there is a huge gathering of what might well be extremist armed groups attempting to leave Syria and enter Turkey.
Be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, and of course then, he's already repatriating ISIS fighters, I think, two back to the United States and seven waiting with their bags packed to go back to Germany. So, you know, Erdogan basically, NATO, being a NATO member state, and being an ally of the U.S. coalition against Syria, and of course having been the primary incubator of the terrorist groups that invaded Syria, including ISIS, he's now sitting on, you know, a powder keg
yes.
that could go one way or the other, and
yes.
he can release that element at any moment back into the United States, back into the EU, and we know that this has been happening over the last 9 years.
Yes.
This was predicted by Muammar Gaddafi mm-hmm. before he died. You know, this would be basically the snake that we've been feeding if the West is going to come back and
yes.
bite it.
Well, I'm really glad I asked that. Vanessa, we look forward to seeing you here. And your Twitter account is very valuable, particularly in light of what you just outlined for us. And we thank you very much for staying up to talk to us. Look forward to seeing you in Canada.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Phil. Look forward to seeing you.
Okay, dog. Bye-bye. That was Vanessa Beely, and just write Vanessa Beely Twitter, and most of the matters she touched on here is that she has outlined. And Phil, you were going to mention where else she's going to be.
Right, so Vanessa Beely will be in Hamilton Tuesday, December the 3rd at 7 p.m. at the New Vision United Church, 24 Main Street West. And she will speak 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, December the 5th in Toronto at the Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. And Friday, December the 6th at 7 p.m. at Palestine House, 3195 Arundale Station Road in Mississauga.